Where am I now? Have you ever asked yourself that question? I'm Gabrielle Cardona, personal success coach and host of this show. Unlike conventional counseling, coaching is about learning about yourself, listening more than talking. And today we're going to ask a very important question that you can ask yourself. Where am I now? Well, that depends. What do you mean? Do you mean in the room or in the life or in the world? Well, you know what? There are different answers to that question. Where are you now? Not everybody can answer that question, but we want to go ahead and invite callers, listeners, to call into the show. If you have something you want to share, if you have a question you want to ask, I'm a public figure now. The number is 888-627-6008. But today we're going to talk about where are you now in the world? There are a lot of people who think we're born with a personality. Some people think that nurture really does mold who we become. But I've been doing this for about 15 years now, and the first time that I had my personality profiled, I was 8 years old. And I was so excited to know that not only was I normal for my personality, but I was very good as a person. I just wasn't very common as a personality in the world, so there weren't very many people like me. A lot of people have heard about the MBTI, the Myers-Briggs Type Indicator Personality Profile System, and they've even had their personality profiled, and they've seen pretty good things with it. They've seen a lot of people use it in a successful and proactive way. But then, of course, with everything good, some people didn't quite do it right, or they had the results that they didn't really expect, or sometimes the people even administering the test didn't really know what they were doing. So not everyone has had success with it. So what we're going to do very quickly in this first part of the show is just go over the four different dichotomies of the MBTI personality profile system without going into a whole lot of detail. A lot of times when people take a test, it can be up to 200 different questions, and that's very long, and it's very tedious, and sometimes it's very difficult because depending on the way the questions are phrased, it can almost be more difficult to even understand the question than to answer it based on your behavior. So let's just talk about the four dichotomies. If you've ever heard of introvert or extrovert, people use it in the daily conversation of an extrovert is just someone who really likes to be social, and an introvert is someone who's painfully shy. That's not true with the MBTI. It's very important to understand that the first letter of your personality is about your social energy. We all have social energy, and we're all constantly sharing that energy with each other. The difference between an introvert and an extrovert is that an introvert gets their energy when they're alone from within, and when they become socially interactive, they share that energy and they spend it with and on other people. An extrovert is someone who gets their energy by being socially interactive. They enjoy being interactive with many people at the same time. And when they're alone, their energy resources become depleted. They actually get tired when they are alone for an extended period of time. Well, okay, so some people say I'm both. Absolutely, everyone does both. What you do is not your personality. How you feel while you're doing it is the indication. So some things that I just mentioned to people that are a pretty good, pretty reliable indication of whether you're an introvert or an extrovert are things like when you have people in your life that are important to you, how easily do you call them your friend? An introvert only counts about a handful of people their whole life as a friend. They can know a lot of people, they can like a lot of people, and a lot of people can like them. Introverts are very social people. They just don't let very many people in deeply to themselves and into their lives. An extrovert, if you like someone, you're friends. If you know them, you're friends. If you've been socially interactive with them, hey, you know what? We're friends. I'm sorry, what was your name again? And then some people say, oh, yeah, that's definitely my mom, or, oh, yeah, no, my sister's definitely an introvert. Well, here are some other things just to kind of help you Really be sure that you are one or the other. Some of the things that people will say if they're an introvert are, I really don't like it when other people interrupt me. I would prefer to stay quiet, to let you finish. I'd prefer that over having to interrupt you in order to be heard. Another really good indication that you might be an introvert is if you don't want to raise your voice in order to be heard in the conversation, you would really prefer that they turn the volume down or go into a different place that's more quiet so you're not competing for the floor. So you don't have to spend a lot of energy in order to be heard by the people in your life. Okay, so keep in mind that the first letter of your personality, you're either an introvert or an extrovert. The second letter of your personality is about where you focus your attention. This means that we have a lot of places that our attention wants to have some focus. We have five senses that are going on all the time. We have a lot of things going on in our world around us, stimulating our senses all of the time. But we also have an inner world. Our mind and hearts, our thoughts and feelings, these are things that are responding to our external world. The thoughts and feelings that we have come together to form complete concepts. They have connected relatedness to each other. They have a deeper meaning. They have a very profound use. If you're the kind of person who's very aware of everything going on around you, you're probably a sensor. If you're someone who is focused on what's going on inside of you, you're probably an intuitive. But let's go ahead and run down the list again, just to be sure. Since we have things that are stimulating us, even without our conscientious focus, we have our peripheral vision. We have a very, very sensitive sensing sound. We have an ability to hear things that are even from a far away distance. Then we have our tasting and our smelling. We have skin. We like to feel things. A great way to determine if you're a sensor, if you're sitting there looking at some food and it's not really looking too good, how much do you still want to take a bite? A sensor would say, you know what? It's an experience. It's about life. Even bad food is a good experience because that's what life is about. An intuitive would say, no, actually, you know what? I think I'm okay over here. I'm enjoying the view and I appreciate you appreciating that experience. I'll go ahead and let you have your space. Another way to know if you're an intuitive or a sensor is, do you take things literally or do you tend to see them in a more figurative way? When you say, where are you now? Is your answer, I'm sitting in the living room. Where are you? You're probably a sensor. If your answer is more like, you know what? I'm in a really pivotal time in my life. You're more likely an intuitive. Just to keep in mind now, as we're delegating these letters of the personalities, the first letter of introvert is I, extrovert is E. So your first letter is I or E. The second letter of your personality is going to be based on sensing, which is an S, or intuitive, which is also an I. Since the I has already been delegated to introvert, the second letter of the word intuitive, the N, belongs to that function. The third part of your personality is how you make decisions. Decisions are pretty important to make. You are either a thinker or a feeler, a T or an F. Now, a lot of people don't really want to commit to one or the other because they're both very important. But thinker doesn't mean smart, and feeler doesn't mean emotional. What do those terms mean in MBTI? A thinker is someone who makes the decisions in their life, the choices in their life, based on information, facts, analysis, logic, and rational contemplation. They understand that information is the most important thing, and they're going to make the smartest, most intelligent, logical decision based on accurate facts. A feeler is someone who says, yes, facts are important, but when you're making a decision, it's most important to take into consideration the personal needs and individual variables of the people involved in the decision. It would be great if people's feelings always made sense, but sometimes they don't. And the people are more important than the information, because people are ultimately what life is going to be about. They are what the world is made of. So when you need to make a decision, is it more important for you to have the real emotional needs, the personal priorities of the people in the decision as your deciding factor? Or can you say, you know what, I'm okay knowing that I'm not going to be happy with this right now, and you might not be happy with this right now. I'm not going to be upset over that, because I know that if it's the right thing to do on paper, ultimately it will create happiness in our lives that we can enjoy down the road. Now, some people say, well, I do both. And you know what? That's good. That's important to be able to do both in your life. When people are vacillating between one or the other, I give them an example, sort of a way to reflect and say, which one really describes me more? Let's say you had to perform a life-saving surgery on someone that you loved, and you didn't know how to perform surgery. Their life really was in your hands at this point, and someone came to you and said, I will give you everything you need in order to perform this surgery. I'll give you the instruction manual, all of the tools that you need, all of the resources that you need, and you have all the time in the world. There's no rush. All you have to do is learn how to perform surgery. Okay, that's kind of tough. That's kind of a tough thing to have to do. But you know that you would do it because the person whose life is in your hands is very special and very important to you. So you decide to do it, you go for it, and you give it the best effort that you can. The only little condition here, there's no anesthetic. Everything that you're doing for this person is going to be felt by this person. The question is, how difficult would it be for you to learn something academic if you knew that someone that you cared about was suffering in the process? A feeler would be distracted by someone else's suffering, and they would try very hard to comfort that person as they were performing that procedure. A thinker would say, you know what, you got to detach, you got to turn it off, you got to focus, you get the job done, and when you're done, you can give them all the love and support and nurturing that that person needs, but right now, it's about getting the job done. A thinker is definitely not a feeler. The last part of your personality is how you carry out the decisions that you've made. You're either a perceiver or a judger, a P or a J. And again, some people have a hard time accepting the J because they think that it means you're judgmental. That's not true. In terms of MBTI, P and J have very specific descriptions, very specific definitions. When you've made a decision, either as a thinker or a feeler, you need to carry out the decision that you've made in a structured and predictable and consistent way, or a flexible and spontaneous and adjustable way. Obviously, life is going to demand that you do both at one time or another, and if you've learned how to master both of those skills, you will definitely be a happier person. But the question is, what is more natural for you? Do you prefer to do things in a structured and consistent and predictable way? Or do you prefer to be flexible and spontaneous and more laid back as you do them? Some of the questions that I ask people when they're, you know what, I don't know, I used to be one way, but now I'm another. That may have happened over the years. Your life has demanded that you master skills that aren't really your personality. So the questions that I ask people that would definitely give them the indication of what they are more inclined towards in their personality by nature, one of them is, when you have places to go and it's a scheduled time to be there, If you know that you're going to be 2 minutes early, would you take the time and put forth the effort to be 58 minutes late? No, 58 minutes early in order to avoid being 2 minutes late. Or are you the kind of person that says, you know what, it's only 2 minutes. You know what, I might even make it down to 1 minute. As long as the party hasn't started, I'm not really late. That's a perceiver. When you have things to do during the day, do you make lists? A J loves to make lists. And as they complete things on their list, they check them off, they scratch them off. In fact, it means so much to them to complete the task that if they've done something not on their list, they will actually write it on their list just so they can scratch it off. A perceiver, a P, would say, you know what? Lists are great and I really, really like having them with me. Where did I put mine? I think I lost it. And they would know that, you know what? You do your best. You do the best that you can with what you have and you make the adjustments. A J would say, no, you do what you need to do and you do it in the way that it was planned. So those are four dichotomies. That's actually some pretty good indications of what your four letters are. Thinking about, are you an introvert or an extrovert? Are you sensory or intuitive? Are you a thinker or a feeler? And are you a perceiver or a judger? We're going to take a real quick break. When we come back, mixing those letters up, 16 different personalities. Good news, there are four different dispositions. You are only one of four different personality types.
BBS Radio.
Where am I now? I'm Gabrielle Cardona. This is about what really you are, who you are, and where you are. Today we're going to be talking about your nature, where you are in the world. We've talked about the dichotomies, the four dichotomies of MBTI. We talked about them again very briefly today, but let's go over again the different letters and what they are assigned to in words. The first letter of your personality is E or I. You're either an extrovert or an introvert. S or N, sensory or intuitive. The third letter is T or F. You're either a thinker or a feeler. And the last letter is P or J. You're a perceiver or a judger. Well, when you mix those up, that could be one of 16 different personalities. That's a lot of stuff to remember. Well, you know what? Just go ahead and focus on your one personality. No, you know what? This is actually really important because understanding other people is very important. Well, you know what? Let's just stop right there. Why does it even matter? Does it even really matter? Absolutely. Because when you truly know the nature of yourself and the nature of others, that will help you understand, first of all, why, when you or someone else is having a hard time, is it because it's just not your personality? Or is it because it's your personality manifesting some serious issue that you need genuine help with, that you need to go get some help? Or are you just manifesting your personality in a less than balanced way because you need to take care of yourself in some physical or some personal way, separate from the activity, separate from any kind of issue? This is really good to know because when you ask yourself, where am I? It's good to know, who am I? So when we talk about 16 personalities, four different dispositions means each disposition has four variations of it. So when we're talking about, well, how do you know your disposition? It's based on the second letter of your personality. Either you're an S or an N. If you're an S, that means you're sensory. You're very focused on what's going on around you. At all times, you're externally oriented. Well, that then attaches to the letter of your personality that is about doing things in the outside world. That is carrying out the decisions that you've made. You are either an SP or an SJ. If you're an intuitive, then you're internally focused, you're internally inclined, you're internally oriented. Well, the letter of your personality that's about an internal activity is the third letter, the T or the F. When you make a decision, that's an internal function. If you're an intuitive, you're either an intuitive thinker or an intuitive feeler. Now, that's a lot of information, that's a lot of letters, but you know what? Let's think about it in terms of the body. I like to use this example. When we have different parts of the body, let's think about the bones and the muscles, our brain and our heart. What's the most important of our bones or our muscles or our brain or our heart? What's the most important? Well, you know what? They're all absolutely vital. They need each other in order to be able to do their job. They rely on each other in order to keep going, in order to carry the whole body through life working together. The brain, yeah, that's very important. But what would it be able to do without the heart pumping the blood? The muscles, yes, they're very important, absolutely, to carry out the thoughts that the brain has generated. But if they didn't have the bones holding them up, providing stability and structure, how much would a muscle be able to do? Yes, the bone is very, very, very important. It provides that structure and protection for different parts of the body. But how much can it bend? Well, no, you know what? The muscles need to do that. So everything that happens in the body is important, and every part of the body needs the other one as much as it is needed. So when we're talking about the SJs, the sensory judgers, they're like bones in the body. So what does that mean? If they're sensory, it means they're very aware of what's going on around them. And if they're a judger, they care very much about keeping everything going on around them consistent and predictable and steady and stable. So let's say you know someone in your life who's an SJ, and you're not an SJ, but you really, really want to be there for that person because you see them having a hard time. And you want to be with that person and to work with them just in daily life. Here are some tips, some fun tidbits that I like to give people on how to get along with SJs. First of all, express regret if you've done something wrong. They like to hear, "I'm sorry," a genuine "I'm sorry." It sets the world right for them and helps them become better people. Number two, appreciate their thoroughness, industriousness, loyalty, and willingness to assist and handle practical details. Number three, try to have things run smoothly and efficiently for them. SJs dislike confusion, delays, and waste. Number four, honor your commitments in order to win their trust and loyalty. SJs are loyal to the death. Number five, don't take advantage of their tendency to take on extra responsibilities. They will. More and more and more. Don't abuse that kindness and generosity. Number six, respect their sense of tradition and social order. Number seven, be specific and practical. They really appreciate common sense and don't always like abstract thinking. And number eight, don't try to force them into new ways of doing things. Understand that change for them is actually harder than all of the other three dispositions. Well, what if you are an SJ? Yeah, life is going to be a little bit difficult for you because the world isn't very J, just in general. And people aren't always going to be sensory. They could be looking right at something and not see it, and that could make you crazy. Here are some tips for how to get through life in a happier and more relaxed way. Number one, avoid getting stuck in ruts. Just because it's the way you've always done it doesn't mean it's the only way to do it, right? Number two, beware of wanting too much control and giving orders laced with should when you're interacting with people. Number three, remember that there's more than one right way to live and develop an I'll give you your personal space attitude. Number four, learn to tolerate new ideas and theories and even maybe try some on for size just for fun. Number five, don't rule out options too quickly just because you consider them unrealistic. Practice using your intuition to play with your imagination and trust your hunches, as intuition is sometimes called. Enjoy the moment for what it is, not just how you can improve it. Okay, so SJs, they're very important. They provide stability and consistency for the world, and there's nothing that can replace that. But what if you're sensory and you're a perceiver? An SP? Well, like muscles, they do like action. They do like to get things done. They do have the ability to be flexible and strong. And when it comes to stepping in and taking action, sensory perceivers are the best people to look to when something is in the process. So how do you get along with a sensory perceiver? I'm sure you know some. You've got to have some in your life. Well, some suggestions on how to get along with a sensory perceiver. Appreciate their enthusiasm and optimism, common sense, realism, and ability to deal with a crisis. Number two, join them in some of their activities and adventures. They're constantly doing activities and having adventures. Number three, give them freedom. Don't try to box them into too many schedules and routines. Number four, when you're making a request, give them choices and alternatives. Then let go of your expectations. They're going to do things in their own way, in their own time. Number five, don't try to change them or tell them what to do. Number six, avoid overanalyzing or processing feelings or discussing theories and abstractions. Number seven, don't overwhelm them with lots of issues. Pinpoint specific problems you're having and set aside a limited time to discuss them. And number eight, when something important needs to be addressed and they're having a hard time, use illustrations and metaphors to hold their attention and facilitate understanding on a deeper level. Well, what if you are an SP? What are some practical tips of how to get through life in a more fluid way or dealing with other people who aren't your type? What are some things that will help people want to get along with you? Well, number one, you can develop persistence and follow through in order to gain a sense of completion and accomplishment. Be aware of your tendency to take shortcuts. Number two, finish what you start and see your efforts pay off before you start something new. Number three, avoid making too many quick or hasty decisions. Number four, spend time considering what's important to you in order to become clear about your goals and priorities. Number five, beware of your tendency to distract yourself with activity to avoid problems. It's better to address issues as they come up than to let them accumulate into a crisis. Number six, remember the promises that you made yesterday and follow through on them today. And number seven, curb your impulse to deal only with immediate problems instead of the less exciting but very important things. And eight, learn to enjoy the deeper and quieter aspects of life, not just the highs and the excitements. So when you're thinking about the people in your life, the sensory perceivers or the sensory judgers, in the event that you're an intuitive, either an intuitive thinker or an intuitive feeler, keeping in mind that understanding someone's true nature is going to give you the opportunity to interact with them in a more proactive and constructive and positive way, that will help you understand where you are. Asking yourself, where am I now? Taking into consideration the people around you is going to be key. So what if you are an intuitive thinker? Well, some ways to get along with an intuitive thinker. Let them know that you appreciate their objectivity and knowledge and quick mind and wit. Respect their need for independence and autonomy. Develop your own interests. Develop your own interests. Don't rely on an NT for all of your companionship, and avoid being smothering or overly dependent on them. Engage in interesting and intellectually stimulating conversations with them. They actually do enjoy a good debate. And when communicating, try not to overwhelm them with your feelings. Don't be afraid to debate, and don't take their remarks personally. Ask them questions and for advice in problem solving to let them help you find creative solutions. And accept that they are usually the exception to the rule simply because their perspective has the potential to be unconventional. Well, if you're an NT, some tips to make your life a little bit more manageable. Make time for your relationships and avoid taking your loved ones for granted. Learn to listen and avoid analyzing or being critical when others are telling you their problems. Many times people just want to understand and be heard. They don't want a solution. You can also avoid talking over other people's heads. Try to use vocabulary that's appropriate for the situation and the company. Learn to express your emotional side and practice sharing your softness with people that you trust. Pay attention to the practical application of your ideas rather than just the innovating implications of it. Develop your sensing side by enjoying good food, exercise, and sensuality of life. Notice the effect that your behavior has on others, and beware of reacting defensively or withdrawing as if they are intimidated by you. Learn to access your heart and body as well as your mind for information. Pay attention to physical clues in your body to help you identify your emotions and feelings. But you know what? What if you're an intuitive feeler? An intuitive feeler is very aware of what's going on for other people, and they care very much about making other people happy. So, what if you have an intuitive feeler in your life? How can you get along better with them? Well, they enjoy romance and attention, so give them cards and gifts, compliments, hugs, and other forms of attention and affection. Appreciate them for the deep love that they're capable of giving and expressing. And reassure them that if they say no, you're not going to reject them or be angry with them. Be tactful when you're offering feedback. They're so sensitive to disapproval, rejection, sarcasm, and teasing. Criticism of their unique ways can damage their self-esteem. And encourage them to follow their personal and creative pursuits and to put their work out into the world. Be understanding and patient of their needs to process and express their feelings. Don't judge them for their changing moods, and don't take advantage of their kindness and concern, even if they seem like they're okay with it. The truth is, inside, they're not. And support them in their efforts to set boundaries. Respect those boundaries and enforce them with other people. And if you're an intuitive feeler, what are some things that can help you do better in your personal life? Really, really important to look for what fits your personal ideas and interests. Make sure it allows you to be an individual and express yourself. And avoid taking comments and remarks personally. Remember that people are human and that a mix of good and bad qualities in everyone is natural. Don't let your expectations be unrealistic. Be aware of blaming others or finding fault with them when they don't meet your expectations. And avoid becoming overly involved in other people's lives. Keep a balanced focus between their needs and yours. Notice your tendency to project ideal qualities onto others. When you're meeting someone new, engage in reality testing and ask a practical question before leaping into a relationship. Learn to be more objective and impersonally examine the consequences of your choices and actions. Value your unique contributions and strive to be your authentic self. So we've taken a little bit of a look at each of the different dispositions, but this is where it's going to get really fun. A lot of information, a lot to think about, but what does it really mean in daily life? Let's go ahead and talk about the different situations that come up in life for everybody, because we're all just normal people. When we come back, we're going to open up the lines again, invite callers to come in and ask a question if they have one about anything MBTI related, because now we're going to take a very close look at where am I now, asking yourself, since I know where I am in the world as a person, what does that mean I am in my life? We'll be right back. This is Gabrielle Cardona with Where Am I Now?
Radio.com.
Where am I now? I'm Gabrielle Cardona, and we're inviting callers again to go ahead and call into the show to see if they have any questions, if they have any ideas about their MBTI that they want to talk about, because now we're getting to the deeper stuff. The number is 888-627-6008. Okay, so we're thinking about behavior. We're thinking about personality. Well, every personality is good and every personality is bad. Well, not necessarily. Let's go ahead and think about an example of just a behavior that when it's good, it's good. It could become bad. An example of that would be telling people the truth. How important is it to tell people the truth? Well, it's very important. That's being honest. But you know what? Out of balance, a person can become brutal. Or how about feeling good about yourself? Well, you know what? That's confidence. That's a good thing. Well, out of balance, it actually can become arrogance. Or doing things that require power. That means you're strong. But you know what? When you're off center, you can actually become abusive. Taking time to think before you speak. Well, you know what? That's thoughtful. That's wonderful. Or is it obsessive? Willingness to adjust. Well, that means you're flexible. Well, actually, it means you're insecure. Ooh, which one? Or an ability to compromise. Well, that means you're considerate. Well, actually, it kind of means you're weak. Well, which one is it? It's about how centered you are within yourself, taking care of yourself. When do you need to take care of yourself, and how do you need to do it? Now, it's important to know certain things about your nature when you really do understand who you are just in your personality. Then you can say, you know what, right now I'm having a hard time doing this because it is just not my nature of my personality. Okay, so we have some options about how we can change what we're doing or negotiate what we're doing or improve what we're doing. Well, actually, you know what, I'm having an issue. I'm having an issue inside of myself that doesn't have anything to do with the actual activity. Well, then it's not just about right here, right now. It's about taking the time to say, maybe I have to take care of something going on inside of me, and I deserve to take the time to really deal with it and fix it and help it. Or is it, you know what? I haven't slept in 2 days. I really need to take a nap. If you take care of yourself, if you know where you are right now, physically is just about getting yourself back up to 100%. And once you do that, you will immediately do whatever activity it is better. Well, we think about different things that we do and how we feel while we do them and how well we do them. And we appreciate those things and we appreciate them about other people. But what if it really is something deeper? Something that perhaps we haven't given ourselves the time or the freedom or the permission to do as our true nature, the nature of our personality. Thinking about how we modify what we do and also why we modify what we do. There can be a number of ways that we have been able to do things that are not necessarily stereotypically our personality type, our disposition profile. How do we do that? And why do we do that? There are two different reasons and two different ways that we change our behavior. One could be a behavior reward. We're actually given some kind of encouragement to do a different activity, or a behavior punishment. We are really, really, really stopped in our tracks. So thinking a little bit about your life, taking an inventory, behavior rewards. Well, there are a lot of different things that are rewarding for people, but obviously different personalities like different things. What are some examples of behavior rewards that would motivate someone to do a different activity? Well, I don't really want to do this activity, but if I'm going to get this out of it, I'll be willing to go ahead and try. One of them would be a fulfillment that comes from performing your naturally dominant function. That's an inherent feeling of satisfaction that nature gives you when you do what you truly are. Another one would be a verbal confirmation. Sometimes hearing good words from someone that matters to you is in and of itself reward enough. Or then we always have social confirmation. People around us doing and saying and being the same thing that we are is positive reinforcement, a social confirmation. Then there's always monetary compensation, enough money to make the time and effort worth it. Or how about trade? We don't do it very often, but quid pro quo is actually becoming more mainstream now. And people appreciate that a service, an activity, can be worth more than money. Or self-reinforcement, sometimes internal dialogue to convince ourselves of the virtue and value of doing that activity. Then we have a moral satisfaction, a higher sense of responsibility to a larger or more powerful source or authority can be very motivational and very rewarding for some personalities more than others. Or a personal gift, something genuinely pleasing as an acknowledgement or recognition from someone, just as a way of saying thank you. Then there's love and attention and affection. Sometimes we're willing to do all kinds of things that make us crazy. We can't stand it. We're not good at it. It's hard. But you know what? What we're getting out of it is more than worth it. People like titles, an official public acknowledgement and recognition that others respect and are impressed by, can be very motivational. How often do people go to school to get a title? How about power, influence, and control over what happens to other people? What really is that worth? And then we have freedom, liberty, and opportunity to go and be and do what we want, to be left alone, to have that. Yeah, that's definitely rewarding for some people more than others. And then there's personal confidence, knowing that you're right, and security that comes from that knowledge. When you're truly confident, you don't have to be afraid of what other people think. So ask yourself now, based on who you are and where you are, some mindful questions to ask yourself. Which of the things that I just described are the most rewarding to you personally with your personality? Which ones would be the most motivational in convincing you to do things that don't come naturally to you? And here's a really important one. Do the people in your life know those things? Would you be willing to tell them, to make them a part of the process? If they wanted to be, when you think about the things that you do that are rewarding, how much of the things that you do in your life now are a result of a reward and not your true nature? Think about this as we go to a little bit more difficult one, behavior punishments. Sometimes when we're talking about changing our behavior over the years, developing different behavior, evolving as a person, growing and maturing, in order to start a new behavior, we have to stop an old one. Well, we can do it in a proactive way. We can do it in a reactive way. It can be in a constructive or it can be destructive. Go ahead and think about some of the things that I'm going to talk about. Ask yourself these questions before I say all the list of the things that I want to talk about in behavior punishments. Some questions to think about as I go down the list. Which one of these methods have been used most often in your personal life experiences? How do these particular tactics affect you now and have they in the past? How many people in your life currently use these behaviors instead of healthy communication and proactive conflict resolution to get you to do things? And what can you say and do to set boundaries to people, showing them that they need to stop doing these things? A very powerful behavior punishment is public shame, using others' criticism and judgment to take away your self-esteem. Then there's private humiliation, words and actions in secret that make you feel bad about yourself. Personal rejection, words or actions to convey disappointment or disapproval, not only of what you've done, but of who and what you are. Also emotional abandonment, being physically present but withdrawing on an emotional level to create a sense of loss or emptiness that really has no physical manifestation, so can't really be complained about. Mental torture, activities that have no external marks but create confusion, disorientation, and suffering that are repeatedly experienced over and over in your mind. Physical pain, inflicting harm that leaves physical marks that remain long after the action stops. Fear of threats or pain of torture. Deprivation, taking away physical necessities needed. Isolation, in the form of social deprivation for an extended period of time. Then there's just withholding of love and approval. Not necessarily saying anything negative, but withholding the things positive. If you ask yourself these questions, really, who are you today? How much of who you are today is your true nature, and how much of it is a result of things that you've experienced personally? That will help you become more aware of where you are now, in your life, in the world, and inside yourself. Next week, we're going to be talking about how you can figure out where you are inside of yourself as a person, because you'll understand your nature. And something that could be very, very pleasant to one person could actually be very unpleasant to someone else. Something that your friends or family may have done that they seem to enjoy, but you didn't really enjoy. Well, why not? Understanding your personality, also understanding the life experiences that you've had, knowing where you are in the moment, you will be able to understand yourself and understand others. When you understand others, you'll be able to respond to them better. When you understand where you are, then you understand where others are. Ultimately, you will work together. And that's the goal. That's true success. Happiness is about cooperation and harmony and knowing who you are and where you are in order to know and understand better who others are and what they are. Where am I now? My name is Gabrielle Cardona. I'm a coach, an MBTI practitioner. Join us again next week at this time on BBS Radio.